Hi listeners, this is Mike from ReggieReviews.com delving into the world of podcasts for the first time. We're trying out the format and we'll see what works for us, but first up I'm going to bring some of our recent Switch reviews from my mouth to your ear holes. Or, you know, ears. Okay, so we're talking about buying Switch games for under £10. This is a retrospective review special. The Switch has no shortage of games, in fact the Switch has a lot of games. Everyone loves a bargain, but sometimes just spending half an hour on a game doesn't tell you enough about it, and very few of us actually have the spare cash to be throwing around at a guessing game to find that one low-priced gem. So let me save you the trouble and give you my honest thoughts across a number of smaller Switch titles. The plan? Get straight to the point. Are these games worth your time, and do they represent value for money? Okay, so first up we've got Leopoldo Manquiselli, or Sale? I'm not sure. I don't know how you pronounce that. But anyway, it's £5.39. So what do you get? The video game industry is under threat. The tyrants at AME are monopolising the market, though have darker intentions. Indie studios are on hand to turn things around. Also, titular dev Leo has powers. Flaming wheels, spikes and corporate assassins are among those out to stop you. So this is a cartoon meets old school design, screen by screen platform with a double jump, an air dash, which doubles as an attack, and a lovely Tetris-style tune for the first level, and then the same tune for every other level too. Each level is split into small sections in which you're expected to die frequently and restart the start of each section, while grabbing collectibles along the way. Was it fun? For a bit. It wore thin when the difficulty ramped up. The game begins moderately difficult, though less difficult when not chasing each level's three collectibles, but quickly becomes hard as nails to the point of frustration. Time recorded speedrunning adds weight, though is notably missing a restart option. But it's all against a backdrop of shallow level design that delights in simply throwing extra obstacles at you, without providing the sort of flowing high-speed platforming other titles in the genre are renowned for. For example, the first game's boss, which is basically an angry group of comic relief red noses, is an absolute snooze fest. While not particularly challenging, the repetition of the music coupled with a boring bouncing ball that multiplied stick had me dying multiple times, simply because my attention drifted off rather than it being actually difficult. Equally, the writing doesn't land, coming across as attempting outlandish but wholesome, though never actually managing to be funny as such. That said, jumping and air dash physics are tight, the fundamentals work well, the little gimmicks like the chili pepper which adds an extra jump, or extra jumps I should say, switch up the gameplay, fortunately doesn't make up for the fluctuating difficulty and the odd stage design. Will you play it again? Probably not. It's completely inaccessible for anyone not versed in the Super Meat Boy style games, but even for those of us that are, there's nothing really standout in level design that pulls through to hold enough interest. So my verdict for this one is 5 out of 10. That comes from BLG Publishing, and the Veneer Project has an age rating of PEGI 3, so anyone can play it. Next up, we've got Bleep Bloop. This one's £3.99 on the eShop. And what do you get? A couple of blobs bounding across small maps. Yeah, there's more to it than that. Bleep Bloop is a light-hearted puzzle game with two-player co-op requiring directional controls only. The idea is essentially a calm, easy to boot up, simple to control, friendship-destroying puzzler based around those the style levels, you know, those sliding ice levels and RPGs. You've seen them on Pokemon and stuff. You know the sort. Select a direction, your blob keeps sliding until it hits a wall. Then you have to navigate both blobs to the end. The single player game is identical to the co-op, and in Snipperclip style, when playing alone, you control both characters. Unlike Snipperclips, however, you don't suffer for it, as this game is slow-paced and more easily managed. You don't have to flick between the characters as such, you can control them simultaneously. But likewise, because of the pacing of the game, you can just do them individually if you like, keep it slow. It's easy to manage, as I say. In a cool little touch, the devs have also managed to make a pair of blocks cute by just sticking a couple of dots on them. Good stuff. They completely missed a trick in not calling the blobs to match whatever Joy-Con is attached to their respective side, though. I mean, it'd be pretty cool if, you know, you slot a yellow Joy-Con in, characters yellow, so on and so forth. Was it fun? An emphatic yes. The cheap and cheerful short experience makes for a perfect, quick-play tabletop session. Like the Switch's UI, everything is utterly simple and without bloat, lending itself to the overall experience. You get what you see. The music's utterly forgettable and lacking in complexity, but it's non-intrusive, largely there simply to set a relaxing mood with a moody piano piece that wouldn't sound out of place in something like Minecraft. The only issue is the difficulty. In short, it's too easy. Even in the late stages, it never really gets particularly difficult. Will you play it again? Absolutely. There's so much to be said about simple design that doesn't overstep its boundaries unnecessarily. There's enough content for a couple of hours single playthrough, but stack the co-op on top to effectively double that time. I've given this a score of 7 out of 10. This comes from Zerono Games, both published and developed by, and has an age rating of PEGI 3. Again, good for everyone. Next up, we've got 12 is Better Than 6. That's priced $8.99 on the eShop. And what do you get? A top-down, old Western-style action game set in 1873 Mexico with a beautiful hand-drawn art style that was literally hand-drawn with pen and paper. Gun types are era-authentic, and each area is based on a real-life counterpart. Your sombrero-rocking gunslinger is an escaped prisoner on the run to make it all the way to Texas, and to get there you'll need to navigate through a series of rooms within each short level, using either a touch of stealth and slashing a path to the exit, or just going full cowboy, fanning the hammer and shredding through lines of gun-toting oppressors. The control setup is in the style of a twin-stick shooter, with the left stick handling movement and the right your cursor for aiming, though hitting the left trigger to cock the gun sets the auto-target into the nearest enemy, allowing for fast-paced action. So yeah, you can clear out a room, whack the left trigger, bang, 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 all enemies down. The game also features equipment upgrades, which can be transformative even in the odds when used wisely. The arcade speed of play is supplemented by the easy-to-understand mechanics. The easiest comparison to make here is Hotline Miami. But while 12 is Better Than 6 doesn't quite reach those dizzying heights, the stylistic choices, setting and solid mechanics help the game carve out an identity of its own. Was it fun? Yes. The strategy is mostly diluted to learning the layout of the levels and the enemy placements until you scrap it for, can I shoot and reload quickly enough as these guys run through the door? It's fine though, this isn't Hitman. Tubbs, as I've taken to calling it, provides silky smooth, satisfying movement and aiming. Having endless showdowns with moving hats in their ranch dressing doesn't get old, and the challenging one more run hook kept me playing till sundown. Will you play it again? I'll fill my boots. That one I gave 7.5 out of 10. That one's from Hype Train Digital, developed by Inkstain Games, and has a PEGI rating of 16. Okay, now we've got Uncanny Valley, priced at £8.99 on the eShop again. What do you get? Reality twists and turns for poor security guard Tom, who finds himself in the middle of a 2D survival horror made of seriously impressive sprite work. Well, alright, that's not quite the plot, but don't be put off by the thought of pixel art here, as the sprites are dense, rich and incredibly detailed. The game kicks off with you dressed as a hobo, rolling out of a bin in a dank, rainy street. Funnily enough, it's a perfect setup that's really well handled and drew me in immediately. As you wander outside the opening section, you're charged into by a shadowing figure, immediately switching to a scene in which our man Tom wakes up in a bed, presuming what happened to be a dream. Next up, a ringing doorbell grabs your attention before a horde of shadow figures burst in and make a scene. Again, you wake up, this time on a dimly lit train, and then you're off to work. Tom's new security job takes him to an unusually well-maintained building for one so desolate, and it's during Tom's night shifts that you explore the facility in the hope of triggering events and working out what the hell is actually going on, often by collecting videotapes, reading emails, and generally piecing events together. Having a lucid nightmare then waking up in a different room becomes commonplace. Once up and about, you'll mash the B button to examine whatever you can. There's a bit of Resident Evil in the inventory management, and use, you know, X item on Y with the usual level of obscurity to puzzle solving. However, even with the time limit of each shift keeping the pressure on, as well as Tom's abysmal fitness levels, he's terrible, he can't even run more than a few paces, but the building is simple to navigate and it doesn't take long to make progress. The development team build Uncanny Valley as a choice-driven title in which multiple playthroughs reveal an overall plot. What started as a consequence system is a novel and fairly unique mechanic that means mistakes punish the player with lasting effects. That ensures you have to approach situations differently. However, there's a flaw in the pacing in that it messes with the structure of the game to the point of reordering plot points, occasionally causing minor spoilers before they're due. It's a shame that while the meat of what's here is spot on for a 2D take on a horror format, it plays its hand a touch too early. If the clues tying the story together were presented in a more linear method, the plot would probably hold up better. At the same time, that vision of Uncanny Valley would remove its key features. I've heard complaints of the game being bug-ridden, so I can only imagine that it's been patched, or I've been lucky, as the only bug I came across was an instance of some overlapping text. Nothing serious, it ran fine. Was it fun? Well, yes. Everything is creepy as hell and the atmosphere is captured in all senses. The audio track covers a wide range of tormenting sound effects and heart rate heightening tension. Steal a car and you might end up in a weird situation where you lose a couple of limbs after being mashed up by zombie skeleton dudes or something to that effect, so you'll get no spoilers from me. The visual style is just one of many highlights in a professional and polished narrative-driven horror game that relies on atmosphere rather than jump scares. There is joy in discovery throughout multiple playthroughs, and you'll find new items you didn't notice before and bits that pull events together. Unfortunately, its structure can be broken somewhat by the player, and when it's unintentional, it stings as the plot unravels too quickly. Will you play it again? I'll venture back to seek out all the secrets. It is a very short game after all. That one I've given an 8 out of 10, so that's Uncanny Valley, 8 out of 10. Publisher Digirati, developer Cowardly Creations, and that's got an age rating of Peggy 16. Next up is Awe, as in awesome. Price, £4.49. What do you get? An unresponsive, broken, useless... That's just because it's touchscreen only, that's why it wasn't working. Awe falls loosely into the puzzler category, but encased in a god sim light. Players are tasked with building up a low poly planet by tapping segments sequentially based on their colour. The planet spins slowly on its axis while you look for crystal shards of ore, gradually building up funds to add some life to your celestial body. There's freedom to decorate the planet as you see fit based on the very limited options available per level. The ambient, gentle music and chimes will have your BPM dropping faster than an Activision Day 1 patch. However, the issue lies in the fact that Awe does nothing to raise it back up. Was it fun? No. It wasn't taxing, it was too frustratingly slow to be relaxing, and it felt a bit like a demo for showcasing a minigame. Will you play it again? Sorry, but no. Score 3 out of 10. That's BLG Publishing, developed by Badland Development Studio, and age rating of 3. Now we have Daggerhood, priced £4.99 on the eShop. What do you get? An absolute bargain. Daggerhood has a 2D visual style that lands between Cave Story and Celeste. It's not far off the playstyle of the latter either. Daggerhood doesn't have the prestige of the story-driven equivalents, but for a budget title, it has gameplay finesse in spades. Daggerhood's feathering its dialot repeat platforming cap is the classy teleportation mechanic. Like an anime ninjutsu, your character, the thief, Vincent S. Daggerhood, throws his dagger and at a touch of the Y button replaces the dagger mid-air with his own body. The game's double jump can be formed as standard, but can also be activated after switching with the dagger's position, allowing for impressive manoeuvres. This mechanic is eloquently woven into the core level design, creating those platforming split-second, pixel-perfect moments of sheer satisfaction that only precision design can bring. Dying always felt like it was my fault, never the fault of a cheap enemy or set of spikes placement. The environment gives you enough warning about what's ahead with a decent view, allowing players to plan moves as you explore the small environments. Low button lag and tight platforming lend themselves to the fast-paced, stage-hopping structure. A 3-star rating system ranks you on time alone, but the challenge lies in grabbing each level's treasure. The tougher-to-reach items sit in optional routes, creating a difficulty-setting choice of sorts through standard play. If you want the challenge, it's there. If you choose to simply have a blast just teleporting around chasing fast signs, it's just as fun. Rounding off the end of level measures of success is the fairy collectible found on each level. A fairy will appear generally near the beginning of a stage and will only remain in place for a very short period. This translates to you having to commit seppuku for every tiny misstep, as little to nothing is forgiven in teleporting to get there in time. These are often devilishly difficult to obtain and represent the game's biggest challenge in my view, or maybe I'm just a scrub, you can decide. While the new elements are added throughout a playthrough, the visuals, while landing on a very competent cave-based art direction, don't vary enough stage by stage. This is where the game lacks ambition, and with more emphasis on exploring and expanding on the solid foundations, the visuals could have been so much more, offering a path to a more unique feel. The danger here is that Daggerhood will get lost in the shuffle by looking too similar to its peers. There is a story of sorts in there, or at least some lore, but it's not the focus. Dagger Dude is a thief and he gets thrown into a dangerous cavern as punishment for nicking stuff. Frankly, it doesn't matter, it's all about the gameplay. Was it fun? Immensely. For this price, Daggerhood is a steal and shouldn't be slept on by genre fans. It's not exactly accessible, but being able to progress without completing the most difficult tasks should at least open it up to those platform competent gamers who aren't always looking for a perfect run. I have to say that the dagger is the size of a bloody missile. If our man Daggerhood can not only wield that sort of thing, but actually launch it like a dart, you have to ask some serious questions about this dude's capabilities. And who the hell managed to catch him? There'd you a raise. I had a blast while listening to the funky 8/16-bit soundtrack mashup, and I will be keeping a keen eye on the developer's future outputs. Will you play it again? Yes, I'd be happy to start from the beginning again. It didn't take me long to beat the levels and grab the collectibles, but the champion standard of grabbing the fairies still eludes me. I've given that a score of 8.5 out of 10, and it's published by Rataleika Games and developed by Wobblyware. Age rating, PEGI 7. Next, we have Heroes Trials, price $5.99. What do you get? It's a bare-bones 3D adventure hack-and-slash effort. The look and feel appears to be taking cues from The Legend of Zelda, but comes off looking a bit more like one of those PS1 Net-Eurosy freebies off a demo disc. Get from A to B and fight monsters along the way. That's the drill, and the message is clear. Trim the fat. No side questing or skill trees, no character development, no deep narrative, no stringing attacks together, no reason to press more than a single button. The trimming has gone just a little too far, leaving very little remaining. If an NPC isn't going to give you something, there's no reason to speak to them, as the dialogue rarely provides anything of substance. This is also true of our protagonist duo, Ayla and Zol, both of which have the personality and gusto of a UK politician reading a manifesto. Admittedly, this could be a localization issue as opposed to a writing issue. The character models themselves are colourful enough and their designs are decent. The NPC models look the part in this cutesy realm, but there's simply not enough to them. All this is compounded by the utterly pointless time limit attached to each mission, adding nothing to the experience, simply rushing you along, presumably to mask the fact that there's not a lot to find should you stray from the path. There are weak excuses such as, you have a sleep spell cast on you, shoehorned in to justify the countdown, which only serves to get worse when the game later tries even harder to explain why the annoying timer continues within another environment, such as, poison makes the timer continue in this cave, but when you leave the cave, the sleep spell comes back. Oh, and the timer continues to drop while you're talking to the lifeless NPCs too. Thanks. Once you hit the deadline, you simply slump to the ground before being shown a game over screen, the retry option that sends you to the start of the mission. There are no checkpoints mid-mission, only save points. If you get lost, wait a couple of minutes, then find your way and reach a save point. You then have to decide whether it's actually worth saving. Heroes grants a bit of freedom when exploring, but it's rendered a waste of time because of the arbitrary time limit. There's grass to cut down for health drops and money, but there's little incentive to spend as nothing fundamentally changes the core gameplay. This far in, one could only assume the game was aimed at a very young crowd. I'd like to think that's the case, but I simply can't tell. Accordingly, I enlisted the help of my daughter, who, having been mildly interested in the hubbub, decided to have a go. It wasn't long before she was baffled about where to go. There's a marker on the map to guide you, but on occasion you'll need a dull upgrade to pass through the area, and Heroes Trials makes you run around its stale, uninteresting world without any signposting. Momo was not impressed. Alright, so what about the combat? The two characters under your control can be switched on the fly. Ellia is a magic user, and Zol wields a sword and shield. Mashing a single button, strictly no chaining attacks together, allows Zol to perform a poorly animated arcing slash. Holding and powering the attack causes a Link-inspired full circle slash. The left shoulder button blocks, no dodge, no parry. Ellia's magic is cast in the form of a rapid-fire projectile, with the charged attack shooting in multiple directions. Holding the shoulder button when using magic locks Ellia in the direction she's facing, meaning that you can strafe. It's all functionally sound, but really, that's your lot. Bosses end up as simply staying out of range while speedcasting. Heroes Trials gets points for simply being a functional game with an aesthetic that appealed to my 6-year-old daughter for a bit. The developer's description of a dynamic, fast-paced adventure game is arguably misleading. Movement is quick, but everything else feels like treading water. Performance holds up perfectly, and the general colourful look of the game does enough to draw your attention in the opening moments, but there's nothing more to speak of. Was it fun? No. Bar the run-and-gun style of Ellia's rapid-fire spellcasting, though that wore thin within minutes. Hero Trials? Heroes Trial? Heroes Trial? No. Heroes Trials. Even the name isn't fun. In fairness, I do believe the bloat that they sought so hard to avoid was added in and there would be more points of interest, there would be a great deal of potential. Will you play it again? No chance. The game is aesthetically and thematically kid-friendly, yet it does nothing to help them along, causing boredom before frustration even has time to take hold. As an adult, I had to search long and hard for the fun, and unfortunately, there wasn't much to find. I gave this a 3.5 out of 10. Publisher is Shinuden, as is the developer, and the age rating is PEGI 7. Okay, so finally, we have Pipe Push Paradise. This one's priced £9.89. And what do you get? A puzzle game that will flex your mind. You're an adorable little plumber. Well, sort of. You push pipes to get water flowing. Close enough. Your father was a plumber, and the locals are really interested in whether you're as capable in the field. To which I shrug my shoulders and say, nay, I do this for fun. The dialogue is a cute vehicle for moving from puzzle to puzzle and is in cahoots with the art style, which has a tile set and pastel colour scheme that wouldn't look out of place in something like Sonic 3D. The warm beach environment is welcoming and helps to offset the rage-inducing difficulty of some of the puzzles. It gets tough. Core gameplay involves pushing pipes around in a block-pushing puzzle with slight twists here and there. When pushed from the right angle, some pipes will still stand upright, meaning you often have to think in three dimensions, perhaps creating an archway as means of not only linking the water flow, but creating a means to escape the area. The control options here are the stuff of dreams. A single button press instantly resets the puzzle. Another allows you to revert back to your last move for when your meat hooks fail you, and in a stroke of genius simplicity, there's a redo button. Undo, redo, restart. Snappy. Was it fun? Yes, yes, yes. Pipe Push Paradise can be beaten in a couple of hours, but it was enthralling for that time, with well thought out puzzles and a challenge that gives you a feeling of accomplishment. Will you play it again? I will, because I can't remember any of the solutions to the tougher stages, so it'll be fresh again. My score for that one is 8 out of 10. That's from the publisher Digirati and developer Corey Martin, age rating of PEGI 3. Well, I hope you enjoyed this merry tour of some of the Switch's budget range. Keep it at Reggie Reviews for more to-the-point reviews. You can catch us at www.reggiereviews.com. You can find us on Twitter at Reggie_reviews. And you can find me at 2DMike3D. Always happy for a chat about games. Always happy to share some ideas, do some collaborations. Just keep here at Reggie Reviews and we'll see you again.